From the heart of Montana, this is Big Sky, Small World, Carroll College's student podcast. Big Sky, Small World, like a mountain high, Montana, took
it to the big sky. All aboard, choo-choo. Today we got quite a story to tell you all listeners, a Big Sky, Small World. This is the train station workshop, where as a newly hired conductor, I will be guiding a non-stop run through the numerous topics my mind seems to think is so important to fixate on. Can you hear the music, Alejandro Inguirinos?
Hello? You should have a super edit of bloopers that's just us telling each other, bro, we're going to keep that in. Dude, we got to keep that in.
Dude, Kurt Angle is probably the best wrestler. He won a gold medal with a freaking broken neck, bro.
Really?
With a broken neck.
Hey, like a gold medal...
Olympic wrestling heavyweight gold medal against an Iranian champion with a broken neck, and he won.
That's crazy. This is a meme about
dude. Search it online. Oh yeah, Perk. World. So his he's known as Perk Angle later on because he did a bunch of Percocets and was crazy. And he liked
Perk
to be sus.
Angle.
Dude, when am I expecting to get my merch?
Oh yeah, it's in my room.
Dude, this is all on the podcast. I think I might just keep it in, just talking.
You should keep it.
Just do a daily WWE segment.
That'd be really fun. I'm reading about Perk Angle right now. He looks like he does perks. He has zero neck.
Oh yeah, that's the best part. All right.
His neck is wider than his head. It's so cool. He's like one of those thumbs from Spy Kids. It like slopes into his head.
All right.
There's mouth.
All right, you gotta be quiet for this part. You can laugh, you can smile, I keep it in, I don't care. Today we got our second passenger, who will introduce himself shortly. But first, let me admire this man as if he was a newly discovered sculpture from ancient Greece. Dude, stop laughing.
No, keep going.
All right, I'm gonna read it.
Okay. The greatest meme of all time is... this clip of pirate ships pulling up.
No, not only pirate ships, the conquistadors, which are
your
relatives.
Yeah, the conquistadors, which is my great-grandpa.
He gave you the family heirloom.
My inheritance.
The JBL speaker.
The JBL speaker, So these conquistador ships pull up, and they just start playing Fetty Wap on a JBL speaker.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah.
It's really funny.
For like 30 seconds, yeah.
So my favorite one meme is an Eastbound and Down clip where he's bringing a speaker to the funeral and he plays Oogway Ascends while he walks in.
I'm going to play that at your funeral.
No, I want you to play Yeah, Baby.
Okay, I can play Yeah, Baby.
Well, it's actually Again by Fetty Wap.
I can play 679 by Fetty Wap.
Oh my God. I don't understand how, like, I try to get us back on track. We get on track.
Yeah.
And then I
track.
Lose it. I lose it.
This is my fault. I'm going to play the John Cena theme song and then I'm going to RKO your tombstone.
No, dude. Oh. Bro, when I heard you and Ian were going to the WWE event with the new Triple H administration and it was going to be televised, oh man, I was jealous.
This is really cool. You should have been there because Randy Orton came out.
I know.
Neither me and
he's
Ian
one of my favorites. He's the RKO king. You should go. All right. Anyone listening, go on YouTube right now. Search Randy Orton RKO's his family. It's hilarious.
RKO's his family? I'm going to look that up right now.
No, don't look it up right now. We're having a serious interview. This is for later. But he RKO's his wife. He RKO's his two young boys into a pool. The Viper never sleeps.
This is great.
But I did go to WWE event with my dad. Shout out my dad again. He's getting two
mentions.
Shout
out Lester.
He's shooting 2 for 2 right now. It's pretty crazy. And this was during the Daniel Bryan era where everyone was shouting, doing the yes, 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 yes. And that was huge because he was taking the WWE by storm. This was in Washington. He's from Washington. Sold out. Key Arena?
Yeah. Now it's Climate Pledge.
It was the Key Arena when I went there, and it will remain that because that's what I said, and that's my memory of the events. You understand me?
I understand you, pal. Don't beat me like last time.
But the funniest thing about WWE events, it was a smaller show. WWE was kind of falling off. This was during the TV era. It has a name for it. It was kind of lame. Like, they're all being...
The color TV era.
No, they're all being nice, and it wasn't the Attitude Era with Stone Cold, Steve Austin, Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Yeah.
Kurt Angle, the gold medalist, also known as Perk Angle later on in his career. That's another story.
He did a ton of drugs.
But he did a really cool backflip, though, on the top rope, so it was cool.
It was cool, yeah.
Yeah, that the Attitude Era was the best era, but okay, I don't know how we got sidetracked once again. This is not even in the script. I'm just talking WWE.
No, but this is cool. I'm into it.
So it was a smaller show. It wasn't televised, but with these smaller shows, what they do to get the crowd involved is they have a heel and a hero or a foot, whatever the other opposite of a heel is. For
a toe?
No, it's a heel and a face.
Oh, because you kick people.
Yeah, the heel's a bad guy, face is the company, the other good guy.
Okay.
And so they had a tag team wrestling match, and there's these two guys, don't remember who they were, not that important. They were the heels, and what their whole point was to insult the whole crowd of Seattle and the people of Washington.
Oh, okay.
Like, this
place is
a dump. You fans, you smell weird. And then, of course, it gets the crowd involved.
Brothers smell weird.
And then the face wins. I think it was a tag team championship match, so that was pretty cool. I think Daniel Bryan might have showed up, but then at that point, I wasn't really cool with him. I was more of a RKO fanboy. I was more of a fan of Viper, the Legend Killer. I wanted to come out and RKO my boy from Washington just because that's the coolest thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this guy, he's a legacy, right? His dad was... In the WWE before him, he's known, he's renowned. But this guy would kill the legends of the WWE universe. So you got Jake the Snake. Fun fact, Jake the Snake, his whole gimmick was he brought a python onto stage. Here's another fun YouTube video for you guys to watch. Search Jake the Snake's snake bites a wrestler on live TV and doesn't let go. That's the funniest thing ever. It's a big snake, and this snake is clamping down on this other wrestler, and they're trying to get him. But he doesn't just walk in with the snake. No, he walks in with the brown sack, and then he throws the sack onto the stage, and then the snake comes out of the sack. That's the whole gimmick.
He just chucked his snake on stage. He was probably pissed. No wonder the snake was like, "You're keeping this fucking sack."
So you know how wrestlers have their finishing moves. His finishing move was he brought out the snake. Well, this time the snake bit the guy. He wouldn't let go. And it was hilarious.
His finishing move was poisoning people.
No, imagine the guy had blood all over his face. He's screaming. He's like, get the snake off of me.
He's the heel.
And then you have Ric Flair. Yeah, that's where it comes from. It's a Ric Flair reference. WWE goes deep in music. And his whole gimmick was he would slap you, and he would say, woo, and he would just keep on slapping you, and the crowd would just, they would love it.
I've done that before.
But he walks out in these elaborate feather robes, and it's like he's flying. He's Ric Flair drip. That's the whole point. He was dripped out head to toe. Oh, my God, this sucks.
No, this is awesome. This is great.
And then you have Stone Cold Steve Austin, right?
Mm-hmm. He gave you Cold Stone ice cream. Stone Cold Steve Austin is famous in my head because in my head, whenever I've had, and this hasn't happened often, right? But whenever I've had a little bit of alcohol in my system, I've said that I'm Stone Cold Steve Austin because I'm sober.
So his finishing move was this. No, I like that. I'm sorry. I'm just really complicated. His finishing move was the Stone Cold Stunner. So he would kick you in the stomach. And you would bend over, and then he would grab your head, and then he would, like, jump forward with your head on his shoulders after he just kicked you in the stomach, and it was the best finishing move of all time. Well,
I think I've seen this, yeah.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Stone Cold had this legendary feud. I mean, when you heard the glass break, the whole stadium erupted in just mayhem because they knew it was about to get serious. And so what The Rock would do is... They had a deal between each other is if The Rock could make Stone Cold smile, he would get a beer after the show. So whenever Stone Cold would stun The Rock, The Rock would do the most elaborate response to getting stunned. I mean, he would roll onto his back, do a handstand, and launch his feet over the top ropes. And it's just, dude, it was awesome. Him selling the moves made it so much better. And if you watch some of the highlights, you can see Stone Cold smiling because he couldn't help but laugh. Because Stone Cold, you know, he's this tough, bad guy. He wears all black and he kicks butt and he does not care for the management.
Yeah.
And so his famous quote is Austin 316. Well, he was doing this promo match, and I think it was against Jake the Snake. That's a fun callback right there. And Jake the Snake, he went on this religious, per se.
Eulogy.
No. Okay.
Effigy. Gospel.
All right, so it was a King in a Ring match, and basically this is a tournament style between the wrestlers. Whoever makes it to the end wins. They become the King in the Ring, and essentially they get the push by management to be the new star of WWE. Well, I think he was wrestling against Jake the Snake. That could be wrong, but if it isn't, that's pretty awesome that my memory could remember that. And Jake the Snake, before going in, because, you know, you got to get that interview before going in to get the crowd hyped, he goes on a rant about John 3:16 and how it is divine for him to win because it's God's command that he shall become the King of the Ring and become the leader of the people. Well, of course, Stone Cold wins with, I think, is he was injured at this point, but it wasn't his major injury, which happens later on. After he wins, he says, Austin 3:16 says, I just whipped your ass, and that's the bottom line because Stone Cold said so. And that became it.
That's so cool.
And just imagine, like, you're in the crowd. You just hear someone say, Austin 3:16 says, I just whooped your ass. Total improv. And then he follows it up with, and that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Does that mean he outranks God? You think, like, religious people get a little pissed?
Oh, no. Preachers loved him for that because, yeah, he talked about how preachers and reverends and priests would come up to him and say thank you. They were ecstatic that he would do that because that is just that's such a cool thing to do.
The gospel of Stone Cold.
Later on, then he started doing, he had the crowd respond to him by saying, what? So every time management would talk, the crowd would just chant, what?
Dude, this is awesome.
Dude, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm a tome of knowledge with WWE references.
You're a tome of knowledge. You agree more. The WWE is just like people trash talking each other for 2 hours.
Oh, it's so much. It's so good. And there's so much videos you have to go through to get to lore that it's like, oh my God, I can't believe I have to watch it. But if you do, it's worth it. I haven't. I kind of supplement my knowledge from YouTube videos. But there's this guy, and he's called Mick Foley from Washington. And he had a couple of personas. He had a persona called Mankind, which was this deranged guy. He wore a leather mask and he walked around funny, like he got a problem with someone, like he's hearing voices. He had another persona called Dude Love, and I bet you can guess what that's about. Total hippie, wore tie-dye shirts, wear Ray-Bans, walked up to the ring, and then his other
finishing move, one hit.
And his other persona was Mick Foley. He's the only person in WWE history to win the World Wrestling Heavyweight Championship 3 times, each for a different persona. So he won it with Mankind, he won it with Dude Love, and he won it with Mick Foley.
That's awesome. It's like a middle school. Recess.
Oh no, not Mick Foley. Like, okay, before. Cactus Jack.
Cactus Jack is such a good name. Holy dude. What was Cactus Jack's outfit? Was he like a cowboy? Did he have like backyardigan like cactus paddles that he would like slap people with?
Okay, I remember. So he basically wore red flannel over gray flannel, and he carried around a barbed wire bat, and he beat people with the bat, and that's why he was called Cactus Jack.
I'm looking this up right now.
Dude, I think you've just missed a big part. He carried around a wooden baseball bat that was covered in barbed wire. And he would swing it at people. Dude, the Attitude Era was amazing.
That's crazy.
And then, of course, you had Triple H. And Triple H's whole gimmick was he was kind of like the bad boy of WWE. But he carried around a sledgehammer. And his finishing move was he would have one of his buddies on the ringside throwing the sledgehammer and hit the other person in the face when the ref isn't looking. And then, you know, he's knocked out. And then he wins the match. And he's the champion again. Well, at first, it was a real sledgehammer. Yeah, and he actually broke a couple people's skulls doing that. So then they switched it to a rubber sledgehammer. But even again, that still hurts when you hit someone with it.
Yeah.
So, it was just funny hearing him tell the story. But anyways, back to Mankind.
The Attitude Era, a.k.a. the Dementia Era.
Listen, there was a match, and it's called Hell in the Cell. And I guess you can wonder why it's called Hell in the Cell.
Oh, yeah. You showed me a video of this. It's so cool.
It's a steel cage surrounding the ring. And the only way you win is you get up and you get out. Well, it was against The Undertaker. This man is undefeated in WrestleMania. If you ever hear the bells toll, just know The Undertaker's coming to take you away. And it ain't going to be pretty. Well, somehow, get on top of the steel cage. Now, these guys are not skinny guys. These are heavyweights. The Undertaker is probably 300 pounds. Cactus Jack is probably 350. We don't know the exact weight because WWE likes to emphasize or exaggerate to make it even better. Like, oh my God, Mankind weighing 450 pounds versus The Undertaker, 370 pounds. For the World Heavyweight Wrestling Championship. So they're fighting on top of the ring. I kid you not, this is not even scripted. Mankind told Undertaker, throw me off. So the Undertaker, 20 feet in the air, throws Mankind off of the steel cage onto the announcer's table. He falls, table breaks. You think that's it? No. Mankind climbs back up the cage. And this is not like a steel cage. This is like a chain link fence.
Yeah.
And he climbs back up. The Undertaker's in disbelief. They fight some more. And then he sends him down. The Undertaker picks Mankind up by the throat, lifts him high so the whole crowd can see, and he choke slams him through the chain link fence. Mankind falls 16 feet through until he hits the canopy of the ring, but he doesn't stop there. He goes through the ring, and he falls through. And I kid you not, he climbs out of it again. And he has to be tombstone twice for him to lose. But you can see when he climbs, he's unconscious. Thank God he didn't die. His teeth were lodged up into his nose. His teeth broke through his lip, and got stuck in his nose like it was clogged.
He goes home, hey, honey.
It was the most unbelievable thing in the world. And then, of course, you have Jerry the King Lawler, who was the announcer. He was pretty funny. He actually has one of the fastest eliminations in the Royal Rumble, where he's like, Vince, because Vince McMahon was announcing at this time, was the owner of WWE. He's like, Vince, it takes a king to know a king. And he walks, because he was announcing during the Royal Rumble. He rips off his shirt and he has a robe on, like a felt robe, like a royal robe with a big hat. He hops into the ring and then he gets sent right out. And Vince is like,
"That's awesome."
Vince is like, "What'd you say, Jerry?" He's like, "It takes someone to know someone. I don't know. Was I just in that ring?"
That's great.
Yeah, we could probably talk WWE for this whole time and schedule another. Dude, I can't. Oh my God, dude, the day just sucks.
No. If you're having fun, if the teeth of your heart, if the WWE teeth are lodged in your heart,
dude. But he broke through this chain link steel cage, then broke through the canopy of the ring. Dude, the Undertaker admitted, I thought he died. He thought he just killed that man. Not once, but twice when he threw him off the ring onto the announcer's table.
Yeah.
And then backed
it. And then broke through the ring.
Craziest
he
thing.
He might not have died.
Ever. And then there was these guys called the Dudley Boys. And their whole gimmick was.
The Dudleys?
Yeah, they're a wrestling team, like a tag team. And their whole gimmick was tables. I'm like, Dudley! And then the crowd would chant, get the tables. And then they get the tables and they slam the dudes through the today tables. We have
cherry wood table. Ah, today we have bed table. Ah.
Dude, the Attitude Era was crazy. I mean, I think there was one point Stone Cold Steve Austin rolled in a milk truck and The Rock and Vince McMahon and like 25 police officers. Because, you know, they had to make it look legitimate. They had like 30 cops in uniform in the ring. they're all standing there talking smack about Stone Cold. Well, Stone Cold shows up when he's not supposed to. He's banned from being in the arena because he's no longer in the WWE. Well, he shows up. He gets the milk truck going, and he gets this hose cannon for, like, firefighters, and he just hoses down the whole...
With milk? The milk truck has, like, a fire hose on.
And another thing is he rolled in once with a Zambini, and he was just choking beers out to the crowd with the Zambini, just cracking them. Pretty funny. All right.
Pretty fuck with the t-shirt cannon.
For the listeners at home, I hope you enjoyed the time through memory lane.
A little tangent, yeah, through our past. That'll get you some points on the AP US history test.
Yes, you need to study for those, folks. Coincidentally, both you and me also got 5 for that. What's another thing? We might as well just be related. Well, AJ, I feel like I learned something today, hopefully.
And so what we have learned applies to our lives today. God has a lot to say in his book.
Big Sky Small World is sponsored by the Carroll College Communication Center.
Helping the Carroll and Helena communities with presentations, multimedia, and podcasting since 2020.
Find us in the library or email Director Alan Hansen at ahansen@carroll.edu.
Hello, and welcome back to Crib Critics. I'm Lexi Larson, and I'm here today with Abigail Mers. Say hi.
Hello.
Welcome to the pod. Today, we're going to be, once again, talking with Carol students about their favorite nostalgic TV show or movie from their childhood, and we are going to be discussing the Hilary Duff 2004 movie, A Cinderella Story, which Abby was only 2 when this movie came out. For some reason, we have a trend of movies that came out way before people were born, but yet somehow it becomes our cult classic through parents, through siblings, something about it, I guess. Abby, why this movie? Why did we choose to talk about it? What did it mean to you? Any nostalgic memories?
Lexi Larson asked me to be on her podcast, which of course I accepted. And before I knew what the podcast was about, and she said, oh, I'm interviewing people about their favorite childhood movie. And I immediately said, A Cinderella Story with Hilary Duff. Like, there was a no-brainer on this one.
No pause,
no thought. I literally just spurted out this idea. And I watched it so many times as a kid. Like, me and my father still quote this movie to this day, even though I don't know if he's ever really watched it. I used to just watch it. Like, if you remember in the early 2000s, there was, like, these, like, car DVD, like, setups.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, where you'd have to, like, bug your parents to, like, plug in the charger in the front.
In the car, like, so it didn't die during the movie.
But I watched this movie a million times. I do not recall how I was introduced to this movie or when I started watching it. I just remember it being such a quintessential part of my childhood and kind of what shaped romance for me for a very long time.
Or what your idea of romance was. Mm-hmm. So my story with this movie is that this movie sat on me and my little sister's, like, movie shelf with all the DVDs, mm-hmm. which I can't believe DVDs are already gone. But anyway, we had a whole shelf of, like, Barbie movies. I don't know, any of the Disney movies that had come out. And this movie sat on that shelf and we would look at it and it was the iconic photo of Hilary Duff on the shoulders of the actor who played
Chad Michael Murray.
Chad Michael Murray. And in her pink Converse. And it was always just like this foreign high school movie that was my sister, my older sister's movie. So like, oh, that's Sister Josh's movie. We can't watch that. It's too old for us. And then eventually we did watch it, but not nearly as many times and not in the car on the classic radio.
Yeah.
So I guess to give a little synopsis, I mean, it's the Cinderella story.
Yes.
So you already know the basic premise of how it's going to work, but this was set in Texas.
No, the San Fernando Valley in California.
Oh, in the that's right, in California.
Mm-hmm. Great Ridge earthquake or something.
It's set after a earthquake, and it's set in the early 2000s.
Yes,
it's set in 2004. So she loses a flip phone instead of a slipper.
Yes.
She works at a diner,
mm-hmm.
but she still has the whole evil stepsister, the evil stepmom to boot.
Yes.
And she still meets her prince just in high school.
Yes.
So I don't know, if you could sum up the movie, what would you say? Like, is it, because it's more than just the Cinderella story.
Yeah, I would say the parts that I really enjoy, I haven't watched it in years until we rewatched it for this podcast. The parts I really enjoyed now was like, yes, it did center on romance, but it also centered on Sam's like ability to stand up for herself, yes. like in the face of like her stepfamily. She didn't just get swept away by her Prince yeah. Charming. Like that happened actually after she stood up for herself. Like she was able mm-hmm. to like say like, no, I'm not going to accept this treatment. Like I deserve more than yeah. this, and was able to walk away. And I think that was really powerful for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I would say that's what makes it different than just like the classic Cinderella archetype.
Yeah.
But like there's a million Cinderella stories out there.
There is, but this is, one of the renowned like classics. I mean, a lot of girls who watch this, either mm-hmm. our age or older, loved it. I mean, it was on my shelf for my sister. And I mean, even generations past, we still watched it.
Yeah. Like I would say there's like two other ones I am aware of around the same like time, which is the Selena Gomez one and Lucy Hale, which no offense to them, is not as good in my opinion. Yeah. Because I think it misses just that earnest, like
the actual. Yeah. Okay. To start up, Sam is our main protagonist.
Yes.
And we're introduced to her and her wonderful life living with her father.
Fake Dennis Quaid.
Dennis Quaid knockoff.
Dennis
Quaid was everybody's dad in these like 90s, 2000s movies. And we both were certain that her dad was Dennis Quaid, the actor.
Yes.
And it was not. It was just a man who looked kind of like Dennis Quaid. Which or very dad-esque.
It's fair. It's a star-studded cast anyway.
It is. And dad character's not in it for long, because after we learn about her wonderful life living with her best friend, her father, he gets married to a woman, Fiona, and has two twin stepsisters now. And then her dad tragically passes away in the great shakeout.
In an earthquake.
We get a horrible, this is the one part I remember. It is the shot of the earthquake happening. Don't go.
I'll be right back.
They're under the door frame. Mm-hmm. And then he disappears and their hands
like slide away from each other.
I lost my best friend that day.
And I learned that the only fairy tales were the ones I read about in books. Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard. It's a crazy movie. It's on now. And she's left with her evil stepmother who moves her into the attic.
Yes. And no insulation, by the way.
Like, no insulation.
We noted that.
What did they do with her bedroom? Just made it another room for
them
to hang
out. They made it for the stepsisters,
just for
I think.
The stepsisters.
Yeah. Let's just note that the stepmother is played by Jennifer Coolidge.
Yes.
The wonderful Jennifer Coolidge, who does an amazing job in this movie. But yeah, it's not looking good for Sam at the beginning of the movie.
No, we fast forward to her as a high schooler. Nine years from like when the start of the movie is.
Yeah.
And yeah, she's in high school, still living in the attic, and now she's like has an intercom. Mm-hmm. Jennifer Coolidge is like yelling at her
to bring her breakfast. Yeah.
Sam! She has a lot of money. They've inherited the house. Oh, that's right. The whole thing is there was no will.
There was no will left behind for Sam. So the stepmother got everything. And so Sam had nothing to her name, which I'm going to be honest, I'm surprised Fiona adopted Sam, because I think you technically have to.
I think she has. And unfortunately for my stepmom, me, that's like what she says. Right. Her little intro of like, she got the car, the house.
That is incredibly embarrassing. I did not remember that, but you're right. That is like the whole thing where she's like, she got the car, the house. And for her, to her dismay, me.
Yeah, but she gets to keep her and she makes her work at the diner for money for her college fund.
Yes, we did talk about this. It is mentioned that she's like, I'll take it out of your paycheck later in the movie. But like, we're questioning, how much did Sam get paid at this job?
Yeah, she works at her dad's diner, which Fiona redoes. It's all pink. Everyone who works there somewhere, roller skates.
So it was called Hal's, which I believe is probably the dad's name.
I would have to assume.
But it doesn't necessarily have to be. But after the dad died, she basically revamped the entire thing and renamed it Fiona's.
Which is an insane power move.
Oh, and covered up. Note for later, foreshadowing. Oh, yes. Covered up this famous slogan in the movie where it's like, never let the fear of striking out keep you from playing the game.
Which is a Babe Ruth quote, I believe.
Is it?
Yes, because it was somebody's in my high school senior quote, I remember.
Actually, it's a quote from the Cinderella story.
I know, because I saw it in the yearbook and I was like, do they know that this is from us?
Do you know that?
It's like her dad's silly man. They play baseball together. That's like the big thing. Her dad and her played baseball.
Yes.
And so this quote, she covers it up. Everything is... Basically, it's just a representation. The house gets painted pink.
Yeah.
Fiona takes over.
Which, you know, everything. Slay, but like,
yeah, she's always looking great, but
yeah, but not great person.
Not well, a great
and
person.
She also makes all the employees who still work there, by the way, which is crazy to me, yeah, but they all wear roller skates now.
Yes, and like poodle skirts.
Yeah, which seems like a safety liability to me. But
well, I mean, the movie's set in the early 2000s. How many liabilities, you know?
OSHA's
she
like,
makes them use salmon and everything.
Yeah, I didn't realize, I actually never connected that until you just said that, because she eats salmon for breakfast, and then she says the famous, what was it? She's like,
Norwegia.
She was like, it was so you know how expensive to ship it in from Norwegia? I didn't get that as a kid. Yeah. I just thought there was a country named Norwegia I did not know about.
That she just doesn't know how to pronounce.
Yeah, but it's talking about Norway. Yeah. But then at the diner, they're like, oh, salmon pancakes, salmon omelets. What else is salmon? And one of the actors just carries this prop salmon around.
Yeah, the entire movie. He's like the main chef in the diner, and he's like carrying this salmon like, it's dying. Touch the salmon. He's like freaking out the other workers.
Fiona wants to eat me. Bite me, Rhonda. Bite me.
There will be a lot of quotes in this. There's so many quotable moments.
Once again, me and my father quoted this a lot growing up. So like a lot of this is just like naturally ingrained in me. So, and I was just refreshed.
Because we have Sam's admittedly horrible life at home.
Yes.
And then we have Sam's admittedly horrible life at high school.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's a weird hierarchy, basically a mean girl set up, three very mean girls, the hot guy and his lackeys. And this is where we meet our Prince Charming. And yes, they basically hate her because she's a diner girl. They call her diner girl and they like make fun of her and they like try and order food. It's really a weird like bullying sequence.
Yes. But we'd also like to note that the stepsisters are also disliked by this popular group.
Yes.
They try very hard to get in with them. And there's a whole quote about, oh, they got you a Prada bag for your birthday. Try Prada, totally fake.
Yeah, so they're like, why do we put up with the steps? They're desperately trying to get the attention of Chad Michael, which he plays Austin Ames. Which is why I thought it was set in Texas. I just thought of Austin. I was like, Austin, Texas.
No, they're not in Texas.
They're in the valley. And the only good thing going for Sam at school is her best friend, Carter.
Yes.
And her online secret admirer, Nomad.
Who they met in a Princeton chat room. So if you don't know what that is, you got to look that up, what a chat room is.
Back in the day.
Back in the day when I was two and you were not born
when
yet.
When I didn't exist.
Chat rooms.
They had chat rooms for people like thinking about going to schools. And her main goal, her father told her that princes and princesses go to Princeton. So her goal is to go to Princeton. And turns out Austin Ames also wants to go to Princeton.
Which note was ominously told to her the day her father died.
Yes,
so
that's true.
So I wonder if that was like an imprint in her brain of like, I must go to Princeton.
Well, yeah, because she talked about dreams coming true with fairy tales. And her dad said, well, my dream is for you to go to college. And she was like, where do princesses go to college? And he said, oh,
where the princes go. Princeton. And then he's like, remember, Sam, everything you need is in this book.
Yes.
Note for later. Wink,
keep
wink.
Keep that for later. Weird foreshadowing right before he dies.
Like literally 3 seconds before the earthquake
hits. We could say it was a genius filmmaking thing to say that, like, oh, it imprinted on her. But really, it's just because they only had an hour and 30 minutes and they got to fit in all that backstory.
They got to kill the father somehow.
They got to get him out of here before it starts.
You can't have Cinderella if the father's alive.
No, we can't. Sorry.
Sorry, Dennis Quaid knockoff.
You were great.
You were great.
You had your 10 minutes of fame.
I'm sure you got paid. Like, I'm sure.
Yes.
Got major but check.
Her best friend, Carter, is a theater nerd. Which we can relate to as theater students here.
What are you talking about? Okay, no, we do not associate with him. He's a method actor.
He is a method actor. Not
staunchly anti-method
but
actor.
Is his method acting really method acting, or is it just wearing out? It's just an excuse to put the kid in outfits.
And make him do weirdly racist accents sometimes.
Yeah, this movie is not perfectly PC.
Yes. It is the early 2000s. Like, there are some comments about diet culture, body issues.
There was a lot more than I remember.
A little bit of like, not like racism, I would say, but what is it called when like microaggressions? Like,
yes.
There's a lot of microaggressions towards Rhonda, who is the secondary character to Hilary Duff.
I also just realized
the manager at the diner.
Is she supposed to be the fairy godmother?
Yes.
I don't know how I did not notice that until we were literally sitting in here and I was like, oh my God. So Rhonda's our fairy godmother. She's like the best thing at the diner. She's watching out for Sam. She's telling her to go to school.
Mom. Yeah.
She's telling her, she ends up helping her with the Halloween party.
Mm-hmm. She takes Salmon at the end of the movie when Sam doesn't have a place to go.
Yes. Yeah. And Rhonda is played by, she's an African-American woman. And there's a lot of weird microaggressions from the evil stepmother character.
From the evil stepmother.
But also from like other, there's just weird comments in it that or like the way the script was written for her.
Well, she is very much written like an angry black woman sometimes. Yes. And so like I can admit like that is not great.
Not great.
Is it still very nostalgic for me? Yes. But do I recognize that it is a very harmful stereotype? Yes.
Yes. And I mean, she's not always like she's more no. just I feel like when you're younger too, like obviously it's taught and like not saying that this is okay, but when we were watching it, I feel like I saw more, she's just protective over Sam.
Yeah. Well, like I absolutely adore it. Like yeah. I, like she as a character is so nostalgic to me and I remember always adoring her character as a yes. kid. Like I like, you know, you just always want that person to stick up for you and like yeah. to be kind and just like be like there, like ride or die for you. And so mm-hmm. that's how I felt about Rhonda growing up. But I do recognize now that that does stem from a stereotype. It was definitely
from a stereotype, yes. Yeah,
of like, there's a scene where Rhonda is like, oh, now that she's like free of you, I'm going to like kick your ass. But mm-hmm. sorry, Lexi's got to bleep that now. I think that's a quote from kick your butt. Nothing's stopping me from kicking your butt.
Yeah. And so it's like she's going to beat her up.
She like takes off her earrings. Yeah. Yeah. And so like that's a stereotype. Yeah. Yeah. And I love how much we've tangented. We're not even.
Yeah, we're just talking
point.
About Ron. It never goes in order on this no. podcast. The people know what they're getting. They're getting whatever we feel is important about this. But I think that we get introduced to Carter in the best way possible, which is a little white boy in like a tracksuit, like
yeah, like a red
outfit, tracksuit,
like black beanie with a red hat on top, gold chain, sunglasses with like this like hip hop, like 2000s hip hop soundtrack. Anything is possible if you just believe.
He's reading from his script
mm-hmm, because he's auditioning for a commercial.
Yes.
And, yeah.
Oh, one of the most and iconic lines.
So before we meet Carter, we meet his dad who's out there like OCD cleaning his Mercedes. And he's like talking to Sam about like, oh, you know, this car is like a man's best friend.
Yeah.
And so Carter walks out with this little hip hop soundtrack, gets all the way to Sam's car, turns around and goes, Dad, do you see what I'm driving? I have to drive to school in here. Don't you feel bad for me? Because it's like a beat up,
it's
like
a beat up
baby
Ford
blue
Bronco.
Yeah. Like it's a cutie little
it's
car.
It's a cute car.
It's just a little dirty and a little old.
It's not a Mercedes.
No, this is a nice Mercedes too.
Yeah.
But then he's like, oh, I would feel bad if you didn't total three cars.
Yeah, so they're obviously rich, well off.
Yes. Carter is well off. Sam is not.
Well, Sam is not. Sam's family is.
Yes. Sam's family has money.
But he gets in the car and Hillary Duff turns and goes, Carter, what are you wearing?
What? It's my Snoop Dizzle look.
And eventually he changes. And they go to school, and this is like where we see the high school. This is where we see all the dynamics are working.
The whole
Diner
parking
girl.
Situation. Let me just say, their parking jobs are pretty cool. Like, I'm just, do you remember like the back end sequence?
Yeah, they're like, with, whoosh,
whoosh, boom, 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 and like just like
perfect,
backed into
perfect,
a spot.
Like, oh, 3-point turn back oh. into a spot. It's in a parking lot.
I think it was like crowded. A Hummer, too.
Yeah,
like,
a big it was, like, car. It
big
was
car.
Crazy.
And then like the popular girls arrive and they're like convertible and one of them like flips their hair yeah. once like the car stops. It's a whole like, thing.
You snooze,
they park
you
sideways.
Lose.
Yeah. And then, you know, we see the bullying of where Carter is in love with Shelby, the most popular girl, who is dating Austin Ames, our Prince Charming.
Yes.
And then Sam thinks Austin's obviously cute, but
yes, we can tell she thinks he's cute. Every girl in school thinks he's cute, but she's like, oh, they're just fake and they're phony.
Yeah, like they don't even know we exist, and which they turn and go like, Diner Girl, like Diner Girl. And then he's Sam or Carter makes the joke of like, well, they know who you are.
Yeah.
Not
we also
good.
Meet the weird kid at school, and he's just there for laughs.
Who plays Howard in the Big
in
Bang
the Big
Theory.
Bang Theory. I was like, Howard Wolowitz, what are you doing here?
Which I did not recognize.
I didn't know. I didn't either. But that's because we weren't watching Big Bang Theory when we
that
were.
That is true. That is true.
But what is his character? Does his character get a name in the movie even? Oh. Or is he just kind of weird kid?
Oh, he does. He totally does because Sam uses it at the Halloween dance.
Oh, yeah. She's like.
Terry. His name
Terry.
Is Terry.
I did not remember that. Basically, a lot of this all leads up to the ball, right? The crux of a Cinderella story. And the ball, in this case, is a Halloween homecoming dance.
It's a masquerade. Well, actually, so we meet Terry, the weirdo kid, yes. and he's clearly has a little bit of a crush on Sam.
Yeah.
And Sam does not reciprocate. And then once he leaves, Sam gets a text. And we're like, ooh, who's the text
who's
from?
Because
she's obviously very like flustered and excited.
Mm-hmm.
And so she runs away. And she gets this text from Nomad, who is, we know now, is Austin Ames. She does not know that, though.
They're anonymous in this chat room as
and so
Princeton girl and Nomad.
They have a whole montage of them talking. And they talk and are like quoting Tennyson. And he's like, nobody sees me like you see me. Something like
when
that.
When can I meet you?
When can I meet you? I just want to meet you face to face.
I can't wait to hear
the whole,
you laugh.
The whole weirdly homophobic thing of like, well, you're like, I can eliminate half the school's population because you're a girl. because if you're a guy, I'd kick your butt. Yeah. She's like, I'm not a guy.
Yeah.
Which is so weird. So but like, odd. But it's funny. So then after he's like, oh, quoting Tennyson at her and being like, you're so beautiful, even though I don't know you. Mm-hmm. Meet me at the homecoming dance at some time in the middle of the dance floor.
In the middle of the dance floor.
And she then asks her stepmom if she can go, which we get the wonderful quote of like, no. But then Jennifer Coolidge, the character of Jennifer Coolidge, says, you're not very pretty and you're not very bright. I'm so glad we had this talk.
Yeah, she's basically like, you have to not be selfish, Sam. You can't go to this dance. You have to go work.
You have to go work. Some of us actually have to go work. And it's obviously very hypocritical because Sam only works.
And like, she works none of them do 7 days a week. Yeah, she gets all A's. She like has this whole like, please let me go. But Rhonda is like, no, you have to go. Rhonda being the fairy godmother. They have a whole montage. We have to have a montage of them, her, Carter, and Rhonda trying to find her a costume.
Mm-hmm. And they go through like a nun costume, a like Looney Tunes character costume, a night costume, like a luau costume.
They're all like bad.
Yeah. And then she like, Rhonda spots this like lace white mask and like under the counter and is like, do you have a costume for that? And the costume guy goes, no, I don't. And she goes, but I do.
Mm-hmm.
And then we transition to Rhonda's house where Rhonda pulls out this beautiful wedding dress.
Yes.
That Rhonda quotes mysteriously that she was saving for her next attempt down the aisle. We never learn anything more about that. And that's the biggest question of my childhood. I'm going to be honest. I want to know about that.
What was going on with Rhonda?
Give me a Cinderella story prequel where it's Rhonda.
Yeah.
Give me that. Yeah, so Rhonda gives Sam her wedding dress to wear to this ball.
As Cinderella.
As supposedly. They call her Cinderella. I don't really think she had like
no specific
plan.
It was just like, oh, masquerade counts as Halloween.
Because when we flash to the dance, Shelby, who just broke up with Austin Ames, by the way. Austin just broke up with her in a really weird way.
At the diner, too.
At the diner in front of all of their friends, like right before the dance. Also, Austin Ames has been chatting up this girl in a chat room for months, it seems, while dating this other girl. Yeah. So that's problematic.
That's problematic, Austin.
So Austin, shame on you. But Shelby shows up to the dance as Angels, with like Charlie's Angels
with her two lackeys.
With her two friends. And Austin's friends show up as the Three Musketeers. And Austin quotes to have lost his costume. And he's like, sorry about that, guys. And he shows up as Prince Charming, which is wild, by the way. I don't think any high school boy would ever dress up as Prince Charming. Especially if like, they didn't have like a partner forcing them to do so.
Yeah, I feel like they would do it if a partner's like, I'm going to be Cinderella or I'm going to be Snow White and you have to be something. Prince Florian. But
it's just a wild choice for him, I feel like. But maybe he's just romantic with Tennyson and all.
He's just such a romantic. He wants to be a writer. Romantic.
Oh my gosh, crazy. He just quotes Tennyson, the most basic writer, like entry-level writer ever. But he shows up as Prince Charming. And so she shows up in this beautiful scene from the song in the intro. That is the song she walks in on.
Yeah.
And like the spotlight hits her and she's in this beautiful white 2000s dress. With a like, she looks so good. Like Hilary Duff looks good. There is no way Hilary Duff was not popular in this movie.
No,
though.
It makes no sense.
They
just try and hide her in like cargo shorts and baseball
caps.
Like
beat up a hat.
And she still looks fantastic.
Yeah, she looks great. She looks better than me on my like best days. Like
yeah,
let's be honest.
Why is she not so popular? They're like, oh, she's just ugly. She's diner girl.
Oh, she's poor. And I'm
it's
like,
Hilary
she's still,
Duff.
She's still wildly attractive, everyone. But that's not the point.
That's all the
but
point.
So like she descends the stairs like light shining on her, like looking like a goddess. Mm-hmm. Like she looks great. And he like sees her and is like entranced by her, but I don't think he knows it's her yet.
No, he doesn't.
So then she makes her way
to the middle of the ballroom.
The middle of the dance floor, which actually we forgot something. Before she goes down the stairs, her and Carter have an interaction where she has to be back to the diner at midnight because that's when Fiona, who didn't allow her to go to the dance,
is going to go back
to check on to make sure she's there. Which, if you're a parent trying to check in on your child, don't tell them what time you're going to come back.
Yeah, I think it's because she was like, oh, I'll be back at midnight with the girls to like get cash or something. I don't know.
It's definitely the Cinderella archetype of like midnight. But I'm like, that was plot-wise, that makes no sense.
But we digress.
We extend our disbelief for the movie. And so Carter sets an alarm for midnight on her flip phone, her very cutesy blue flip phone, and she puts it on her shoe.
Yeah.
Like a little strappy heel. She like clips the like,
clips
you know, the
flip
two halves
on her heel.
On her heels. So that's important for later. And so she goes to the middle of the dance floor after she descends down the staircase and she's waiting. And lo and behold, who shows up? Terry.
Terry.
Terry dressed as the guy from The Matrix.
Yes.
Which, shame on me for not knowing the guy's name, but.
No, you get it. The black slick back, the slick back hair, the black outfit.
Which
the
he
sunglasses.
Looks great in, by
Actually,
the way.
Actually, yeah, he looked. I feel like they're trying to trick us into all these Carter, Terry, Hillary. They're like, they're unattractive geeks. They all look great. They're all actors. And even the stepsisters, they also look
they
fantastic.
All look great. They all look great, but they were like, oh, look how ugly these
look
people
how
are.
How tacky they are.
I'm like, they're not really. They're just different people
but
with different personalities.
But he's in the middle and he's like, do you know where you are?
Yeah, exactly. In the middle of the dance floor.
Fate has brought us together.
And so he starts doing this like mating dance of Zion with her. And like she's obviously very uncomfortable and like very disappointed. Like she's
this
like,
was her,
what?
This was the guy she was talking to for months. Like,
yeah. And she knows him in real life and does not like him. So it was probably extremely disappointing for her.
Yeah.
And then she breaks an excuse of being like, oh, I have to go get a drink. And then
he's like, I'll go get
salvations from a lady. And so disappears in a very weird way and walks away. And she's like, oh, I knew it was too good to be true. And then behind her shows up Austin Ames saying Princeton Girl, which is her name, by the way, in the chat room.
So this is how we know that it's actually Austin. And Terry was just being weird.
Terry was just claiming the moment, I guess.
Terry was seizing the day.
Which Terry could tell it was her, but not Austin Ames.
Yeah, not Austin Ames.
Not
Austin
those
Ames
eyes.
Is like, who is this? And she goes, Austin Ames? And it's like, you can tell she's happy it's not Terry, but she's upset that it's this popular guy who's just fake. Because in her mind, he doesn't care about things. You know, he steals parking spots and calls her diner girl. And
yeah. Well, like,
he doesn't
actually,
do any of those things.
He actively does not participate in the bullying,
but
it's like,
he's with there and he didn't say there. Anything.
Yeah, he's still friends with all of them.
He's still a bystander.
Yeah. And also, his one friend is terrible.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that in
awful.
A sec. But they like have a little chat and he's like, are you disappointed it's me? And she's like, no. Like, I'm not. And so they like walk off into the garden and like Carter sees this and like gives a little smile and is like, oh, like,
yeah,
get a girl.
Get a girl.
Get a girl.
Let's so, go, like, Carter. Waiting out of the
Carter.
Year.
I know, right? But he.
Oh, we missed Harry's fantastic line.
Oh my gosh. Actually, before they walk out into the garden,
Harry comes back
with the drinks and he goes, this is what me and my dad quote all the time. Like, my dad will quote this at me, like, randomly. Like, he literally, when I told him I was doing this podcast, he, like, sent me this as a text.
Yeah.
It's Austin Ames with m'lady, a devastating blow, a worthy opponent. It is, like, the funniest line, I think, in this entire show.
It's
and I
so
don't
funny.
Know if anyone else cares as much
and
as I do about that.
And then he walks off.
And he walks away.
And then they
bad.
Go to their magic
Yeah,
garden.
Which then... I don't know if anyone will catch this reference. Charlotte Jones lookalike catches like she's a teacher at the school. She looks a lot like Charlotte
but
Jones
the
at Carroll College.
In this movie, she looks like Charlotte Jones.
It was a little bit of a wild thing. But she like sees them together and like writes their name on a list, which is for who's going to be
homecoming.
Is it Prince and
princess?
Which is
makes
weird.
No sense. It's which, just for the to fit.
It's for to fit the Cinderella story, but yeah. It would be king and queen. But that's not the point.
No, it's in this movie.
Yeah, but then they disappear into the garden, and while that is happening, Austin's terrible friend. He has two friends. One is like a very cutie guy. He's like
nice.
Super cutesy, very nice. And then one's like an a-hole.
Yeah,
like he is terrible.
He gets like all the mean bully lines.
Yeah, he's the one who specifically calls her diner girl and is like a pretty big part of the harassment.
He's like the main harassment.
Yeah,
he starts harassing Shelby.
Yes,
and like not just like, oh, making fun of her. He's like, come on girl, like, let's make
I know you want me, like, yeah. I know you want me, and like starts like pressuring her,
cornering
to, like,
her,
yeah, to like kiss him. And Carter sees this, and Carter's dressed as Zorro, by the way. And so he puts a stop to it, and he like is like, hey, stop it. And he gets in between
no.
them. Yeah, he gets in between them and stops them. And he pulls out his little fake sword. The guy rips the plastic sword from his hands,
yeah.
Which is supposed to be comedy. But I was like,
yeah.
He's like, oh, you're dead. I'm going to kick your butt. Yeah. And Carter jumps off a ledge, like jumps off a
landing.
Ledge and lands it. Like he lands the thing. And he's like, that was so awesome. And then they have a whole chase scene where they fight. And then Carter quotes, like, he's like, you know what? I started in Pirates of Penzance 3 summers in a row.
Welcome to act
scene three. And then, like, takes, like,
a bar
that, like, lifts up mm-hmm. and, like hits him in the face. And then he flies back for some reason. It's a whole thing. And then Shelby comes up to him and is, like, whispers in his ear. And then Carter gives, like, an enthusiastic nod. And then they go make out.
Later,
basically.
We find them making out.
Yeah,
because while
this
is happening, this is where your idea of romance came from.
Oh my gosh!
They have a whole
yeah.
20 questions moment. He's like, "How can I not remember you?
Like, how
the
can
song,
I not remember those eyes?"
I'll Be starts playing, and
oh
they're in a gazebo
gosh.
Set up for a wedding. We
yeah.
don't know where this is, and they just start, they slow dance to live music. I'll be in this, and he reaches for her
mask. It's like lit with like candles and roses, and like it's genuinely like, I don't know if this is too much information for a podcast. I no longer am attracted to men. I realized that later in life, but I watched that scene still, and I was like, oh, melting. Like I was like, I was so like, I was like, oh my gosh, like that's beautiful. Like that's what
it's,
I.
It's
want.
Gorgeous. It's a lovely moment.
It is. It really is. And I absolutely adore it. And then right before he lifts the mask and she's about to like let him, because it happens earlier in their dance where she kind of shies away.
She doesn't let him.
Because like, you know, she's scared.
She's going to tell him who she is.
Mm-hmm. Her timer goes off on her phone and he's like, what's that? And she's like, reality. And so she runs away. A la classic Cinderella story.
Phone
and then
comes off the
finds,
shoe. Got to get Carter off of Shelby.
Yeah, got to get Carter off Shelby is crazy.
Unfortunately.
And as they're running out, Charlotte Jones lookalike is announcing the prince and princess, which is, shocker, shocker, Austin Ames and Cinderella. So she goes Prince Charming and Cinderella, which is where I think, like, where the, we know what the costume is now. Yes. I don't really think
that's about. Like, she came up with the costume because she saw them together and just assumed they were like, oh, a couple's costume, Prince Charming, Cinderella.
Yeah.
But she's running off and we never find out who she is.
As this whole chase scene with her stepfamily in the car.
They got to get back to the diner.
They
got
to get back
midnight.
To the diner in time, which, like, there's some great stuff, but, like, we're honestly running out of time. So, like, there's a really great chase scene happening there, but, like, not important. So she showed up to the school next day and being like, she's like, I can't tell him. He's, like, expecting Malibu
Carter's
Barbie.
Upset that.
Yeah,
which,
like
Malibu Barbie, Hillary, you look like Malibu Barbie. What are you,
Hillary
on?
Duff? You are Malibu Barbie. Let's be honest here. Like, he won't remember anything from that night. She walks into the school. He's like hung up flyers looking for
flyers,
her, which he remembers her hair, but not her eyes. But that's another thing.
There's like two more interactions too, where she meets. Like, he shows up at the diner later.
Yes,
because he's still on this search. There's a lot of jokes and plays on his friends trying to help him find this girl. All the girls in school are trying to pretend to be her.
Yes, like the stepsister try to be her. Oh, actually, we got to get to that later. But, not later, but like in a sec.
Yeah.
But yeah, like everyone wants to be Austin Ames Cinderella, but he knows it's not them because he's like, he asks them questions or just like, he kind of knows
you
it's
can
not.
Know it's not the right height.
Yeah,
not
so
blonde.
He himself, so his dad wants him to go to USC
to play football and then come back and help run the family business.
But he met Cinderella on a Princeton chat room where he actually wants to go. So he's like having a conflict of his own working for his father and like feeling like he's not seen and he's alone. So he has a whole interaction with Sam at the diner where he's talking to her about feeling like alone and not seen and like not like who people expect him to be.
Mm-hmm.
And Sam straight up says, like, you want to tell them, like, it's me. I'm the one you're looking for. And he goes, exactly. And then Fiona shows up.
And he has to leave.
And
he doesn't recognize her.
He does not recognize her at all.
This is, like, the biggest, most problematic. Like, also him talking to her while he's dating someone. But, like, come on, dude.
Like, you can't recognize a blonde, green-eyed girl. Really?
Yeah, she's,
really?
Like, the right height. Like, and you know, it's just her eyes that are covered.
Yeah, like, it was.
You can still see her mouth and, like, her face shape.
Yeah, and her body and like everything.
Yeah,
like, I don't really know.
I don't, it's for the sake. We have to have a big dramatic moment when the stepsisters snoop into her emails to try her chats to try and trick Austin.
Yeah.
And then they, when that doesn't work, they go to the popular girls and they set up a big scheme at the pep rally before the big game where Austin Ames, of course, is the quarterback.
Yes, of course.
They set up this whole skit
to playing out
to
their
fully
story.
Embarrass Sam in front of everyone and Austin in front of his dad admitting that, oh, actually he's sensitive and he wants to go to Princeton.
Yeah, so like it's embarrassment all the way around and like Sam's like crying looking at Austin and Austin just turns around, which don't even get me started.
Why
on
did
that
he
one.
Do that?
But yeah, so he like kind of buffs her and so she goes home sobbing and before this Fiona gets a letter from Princeton where they accept Sam. She then retypes a rejection letter and gives it to Sam while she's crying about the Austin Ames things. Of course, she doesn't know, but Sam's obviously not in a good place.
Yeah.
So Sam opens this letter from her dream school, the only thing left she has of her father, and she's
rejected.
She was rejected.
Even though she wasn't.
And like her whole life, she's like, she's dejected. Like she's like,
everything is gone.
Because Fiona goes like, well, you'll always have a job at the diner, which is like, she is now basically like has no escape from her actual abusers.
Yeah.
And
she's
so
stuck.
She's just kind of is given up on life. And Rhonda, of course, gives this pep talk and it's really beautiful.
And then she chooses. Oh,
and then the stepmother and stepsisters come in
to the diner,
slams. And there's this like ukulele covering the saying that falls down, rips the wallpaper that reveals never let the fear of striking out
keep you
from
playing
the game.
And it it gives her the inspiration to say, I'm moving out. I'm done. I'm not going to do this. And Rhonda and the entire staff stick up for
her. They all leave. The customers, the employees, they all leave.
Well, because they only like Rhonda and the staff. They don't like Fiona.
No, they don't care about Fiona.
So if Rhonda's gone, they're not there.
Yeah. So they all leave. And this is like, you know, Rhonda and Hillary, I mean, Sam, have a conversation about like, you know, she's like, I'm so proud of you. Like you, you did this. You stood up, like, you know. And that gave Hillary the confidence to go to the locker room and
have the like the have most a confrontation speech with Austin Ames,
where she tells Austin, she's like, I have nothing, like I have no money, no job, no like future, but I feel sorry for you because you are living a lie, and I'm living my truth, and you should do so too.
And I can't and that wait
she's
for
like,
you.
I can't wait for you because waiting for you is like waiting for rain in this drought. Useless and disappointing.
What a line. Also, did we even talk about the drought?
Oh no, there's a drought
the entire time, and they make a lot of jokes because Fiona keeps the sprinklers on. Do you think J-Lo has a brown lawn?
Yeah,
she's like obsessed with keeping their lawn green and using water even though
they haven't had water forever.
Yeah,
but basically there's a drought that's very
so
important for,
after
like,
she tells him off, Carter comes to be like, oh, I'm so sorry after that, like that pep rally was awful. He's like, she's like, let's do something tonight. And he said, well, I was going to go to the game, but if you don't want to do that, then like, let's do something else. She goes, no, let's go to the game.
Which is very kind of Carter.
Yeah,
very,
Carter
very
is
kind
literally,
of Carter.
This is like so, this is such a perfect like platonic relationship. Like they, he really just cares about her as a person.
Oh, by the way, Shelby totally rebuffed Carter at some point in this movie.
Oh, yeah, he was just like, oh, I was a lot of cold medicine.
Yeah, she's like, I don't remember that night. I was not acting like myself. It's probably a way to...
say she was drunk without saying she was drunk.
Yeah, as like a high school PG version of saying I was drunk.
Yeah.
So he's kind of over her, or at least very upset about it.
Yeah.
And so he's like, so actually as they're walking away, he's wearing his like own clothes and she goes like, oh, what character are you playing today? And he's like, myself. And she's like, it's your best look yet. Like it's genuinely a very kind friendship.
It's so heartwarming.
Yeah. So she goes to the game and like Austin's playing and they're like one score down from like going to nationals or like winning nationals.
The classic
something
setup.
something big that's like very important. Oh, it's like if he wins this, he gets like his scholarship and he's like set for his life.
Yeah.
According to his dad's plans. So Hillary's sitting there and everyone in the crowd is like chanting like Austin, 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 which, you know, if you're in a crowd with a crowd chanting
your ex's name.
So she's like uncomfortable. So she's like, I can't do this. Like, this is too much for me. So she gets up to leave. Austin's like in a huddle right before like the last touchdown. And he sees her leaving this like football stand. Like he sees her and he looks at his team. He looks at his dad and he goes, sorry guys, like I can't. And runs off and his dad stops him and gives the classic whole like, what are you doing? You're throwing away your dreams.
No, dad. I'm throwing away yours.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes to find Hillary.
Goes and find Hillary, which then his kind best friend gets to sub in and be
He says, this is your moment.
This is your moment. And he like his best friend gets to play in this like big final moment.
Mm-hmm.
And while this is happening, Hillary and Austin Ames run into each other and she goes like, what are you doing? And he's like, what I should have done a long time ago. And he kisses her.
And then it starts to rain.
And it starts to rain because she waited for him.
Waiting for rain in the drought, and then they win the game. His friend does it. Everyone in the crowd is freaking out. The music starts playing,
and then as she's packing up her room for to go back to Rhonda's, she finds the fairy tale book from the beginning, which she had thrown like after she found out she got rejected from Princeton.
She threw
across the room. She picked it up, and a piece of paper dropped out. And then we get a cut to Fiona and the stepsister's car is getting towed away. With a bunch of people around, like cops and everyone, and they find out that the piece of paper is a will.
It's her dad's hidden will.
Her dad's hidden will, which Fiona signed as a witness. So Fiona knew existed and just lied. And so Fiona then has to like do community service and like
at the diner,
and it's the whole ending right there. But then Rhonda is the co-owner with Sam, while Sam gets to go off to Princeton.
And Sam gets the house. She owns the business.
Yeah, she's set for life. And then they end up in like the blue Bronco for the end scene.
With
and
Austin.
She's like, and we lived happily ever after, at least for now. We're just freshmen.
Yeah, so
and
what the
you
heck?
See them driving off. And that is the end of the movie. And like I have such nostalgia for it. And I recognize that there are problematic elements to the movie. But it is...
It's so good.
It's so good because it sets up her Cinderella story, but it also just like makes her a real character.
Yeah,
like,
she has a lot. Unlike her fairy godmother, Rhonda's helping her, but she can't get her out of the situation.
No,
she has to do it herself.
I think the thing is, like, you can never make someone do something they won't do.
Yeah.
Like, you can't make them stand
Rhonda,
up for themselves.
Rhonda says when she leaves, when they all quit, she says, the only reason I was sticking around was that girl. So yeah. Rhonda could have left this horrible, awful job with an abusive owner and been great somewhere else. But she stayed because she didn't want to leave Sam alone.
Yeah, because she knew that Sam was strong enough to eventually leave.
There's so many good like relationships that are actually built in this movie.
Like, while I say it developed my romantic, like what romance was to me, I'm actually now thinking about it. I'm like, no, it developed what friendship is, what love is.
What's
just
caring
love.
About people. Yeah.
Love. I think that's the most important part of a Cinderella story is that there are people who love and care about you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we've reached about the end. I'm going to ask you a question I ask everybody.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you what you think this movie has rated on Rotten Tomatoes. And
oh, gosh.
You've gotten the very first one to have a critic score, actually. Everyone else has only been audience scores. So you were broad mainstream enough.
Thank you.
And
then
sometimes
we
read a couple of reviews, but we might not have time.
I don't think we'll have time, but that's okay.
It's okay.
We can always run. I think it got a audience score.
Yeah.
You can do an audience and a score. Critic score. Let's go 63% and a critic score. Let's go 32.
Okay. So the audience score was 53, which I think is really low. The critic score is only 11%, which is incredibly low.
Whoa. Here's the thing, though. They're probably like, oh, this is childish.
Yep. But like the only good one is Funny and Sweet Update of the Cinderella Story, which is like a top critic review.
Yeah.
But then the rest of them that are bad are just every high school cliche in the book.
Yeah, but like that's kind of the point of this movie. Not every film needs to be like a thought experiment. I'm going to be honest, guys. Sometimes
you just want to sit and watch.
Yeah, it's escapism. Yeah. I don't know. Y'all are too critical.
This one's crazy. The movie will wash over adolescent female audiences who don't know any better, like melted brie on a 110 degree asphalt. But for the rest of us, it's a grueling waste of time.
If you can't see me. My jaw is literally open right now.
Yeah, that's
like,
on the floor.
That is like, that's just like demeaning as.
These are men.
Yeah, these are all men.
The women are like, oh, Jennifer Coolidge was fun. They're like, oh, it's fluffy.
Yeah, like it's, guys, once again, it's not a thought experiment. It's not like something deep and like, oh, hard hitting. It's not like the boy in striped pajamas, guys. Let's be honest. When I was a child, I'm not watching, you know, Schindler's List.
No.
I'm not watching Moonlight.
And that's not the point of the movie.
No.
And that's not the point of the podcast. The point of the podcast is talking about things that are nostalgic and make us feel good.
And like, once again, I get it's not like, oh my gosh, a masterpiece, even in like its category.
Fluffy category, but it's fun.
It's fun. People just hate fun.
If you go into it with an open mind to an early 2000s movie, it's great.
When we rewatched it, we had two people with us who rewatched it. One had never seen it, and then one had seen it like once or twice.
Katie.
Shout out Katie Melton and Anna Hume, who watched it with us.
Yes, last week's guest, and surprise, surprise, next week's guest.
Oh my God. You'll love Anna. Everyone. I love Anna. I absolutely adore Anna. But yeah, it's... People just hate fun. Like, it's a movie, guys.
It's worth it.
It's worth it.
Just
be happy.
Eat some popcorn. Mm-hmm. Have a good nostalgic romp with your girlfriends if any of you watch it. Or introduce a new friend to it. It's worth it.
Yeah. Guys, just love. Love and have fun.
Love and have fun. All right. Well, Abby, thank you so much for joining.
Thank you so much for having me. This is the best time.
Isn't it so much fun? Well, thanks for being here and for bringing me back to my childhood.
Thank you for tuning in to Big Sky Small World, the music by Alex Coulter. Please follow and leave a comment on Instagram at bigsky.smallworld. Tune in next week.
We should just do this as the intro.